Now versus Department of Corrections. We're ready.
May it please the court, counsel. Phil Mahoney representing Frank Zamfino. I will first address...
Let me ask you if you want to reserve any time for rebuttal.
I do, Your Honor. 3 minutes.
3 minutes? Okay. Thank you.
I would begin by addressing the cross-appeal, which is the allegation that the present law of the case, that is Judge Kessler's decision that there was negligence, is incorrect. In this instance, it would have been easily resolved had the state filed declarations indicating that they had intentionally imprisoned Mr. Zamfino. They did not, and I doubt that they would. Mr. Zamfino has indicated that there was negligence on the part of the state in determining whether his date of release had already occurred. Certainly, he was lawfully imprisoned. He was convicted of a crime and sentenced to prison. The question is, was there negligence in determining his date of release? I hearken back to my misspent youth where Professor Peck told me it is an old English common law that where there is a wrong, there is a writ. And to say that there cannot be negligence and that in determining whether or not Mr. Zamfino was held beyond the time that he should have been held just does not make sense. You have intentional torts, you have negligent torts. This was a tort of negligence, and that would be my point there. Going on from that, we then are looking at whether or not Judge Kessler could take it upon himself to determine what damages would be. Now, the complaint very specifically alleged loss of the enjoyment of life, as well as potential loss of income. Judge Kessler instead decided that the only issue was one wherein summary judgment was sought, dealing with whether or not there was mental anguish suffered. As the cases I cite indicate, loss of enjoyment of life is a separate item of damages. It is one on which Mr. Zamfino had a right to a jury trial to determine what that might be. This was denied him. The idea that we believe, as far as that goes, that he should have had a right to trial on the issue of whether or not there was mental anguish as a separate one. But this does not address the issue of the loss of enjoyment of life. It does not address the issue of any potential loss of income. So that you have being decided by the court a sole remedy of nominal damages, which does not address either of the two issues I've raised, and that that should be in the amount of $1,000. I believe that the case law is clear. This is an issue of fact. That is, damages are issues of facts. A right to a determination of issues of fact by a jury should be inviolate. Therefore, Mr. Zamfino was denied his rights, and as to the, certainly, I would say this. No one would argue that being confined in prison for 6 months would not somehow diminish your enjoyment of life. And therefore, he should have had a right to have had this heard. As to the issue in terms of the 1983 claim, the state indicated that they felt that because the caption of the case stated Department of Corrections, that therefore we could not apply the case law with regard to the state of Washington. I cited authority showing that a caption is not something that sets this in stone. The body of the complaint clearly indicated it was the state of Washington. The authority says this is not jurisdictional. Therefore, the 1983 claim should have been one which Mr. Zamfino would be able to address.
Thank you, Counsel.
Your Honors, I'd reserve 1 minute for my...
You don't reserve. You have one shot at it.
We do have a cross appeal.
I understand. You have one shot at it. 10 minutes.
Thank you. Your Honors, this is a claim for a wrongful incarceration beyond Mr. Zamfino's release date. The claims alleged were a claim under Section 1983 for a constitutional claim. That claim was not stated because he sued an improper party, that is the Washington State Department of Corrections. It's very clear that a state or a state agency cannot be sued under Section 1983. It's not a matter of how he drafted his caption. The second issue is the false imprisonment claim. He attempted to couch that in terms of negligence, but it's very clear that a false imprisonment claim is stated where the allegation is that a person was restrained without legal justification, which is what we have here. And that doesn't change if the later continuing incarceration was wrongful owing to negligence. In the Kilcup case, the Washington Supreme Court adopted the Restatement of Torts, Section 35, as stating its understanding of false imprisonment and its legal ramifications. The Kennecott case in Alaska Supreme Court, in looking at Section 35, specifically found that it's false imprisonment if the defendant knew they were incarcerating the plaintiff, irregardless of whether it arises out of negligence, recklessness, or an intentional act. This is illustrated in the factually in the Tufts case and the Klein case. In the Tufts case, the plaintiff was arrested for drunk driving because he had all the appearances of being intoxicated. After he was arrested and placed in jail, in his wallet was a card saying that he was a diabetic. His wife observed that he was overdue, called the jail several times saying, "My husband is diabetic, he's probably in shock, this is what his car is like, this is what his license plate is, please look out for him," and they still continued to hold him. The court said intentionally holding the plaintiff and continuing to hold him, even where you knew or should have known that he was instead diabetic and not drunk, is false imprisonment. We have a similar situation in the Klein case, except having to do with false arrest. In the Klein case, Mr. Klein got an altercation with a parking lot enforcement officer wanting her not to write his ticket. He claims that he made an innocent gesture with his hand to which the parking enforcement officer, owing to having post-traumatic stress disorder, overreacted, called in backup saying that she was being assaulted. Again, that was couched in terms of negligence. Judge Peckman, relying on Washington state law, said, even though that's couched as negligence, it's still the tort of false imprisonment for purposes of the statute of limitations. We have two out-of-state opinions that deal with pretty much the same facts we have here, where there's an allegation that the false imprisonment was owing to a miscalculation of a prison sentence. These are the Kennecott case, Alaska Supreme Court, Snow Erlin, Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. In both cases, they found that failure to release a prisoner on time is false imprisonment. Kennecott was relying on Section 45 of the restatement, and Snow Erlin was relying on federal authorities. And it's very clear, again, under Seeley and Klein, that you cannot relabel your claim as a claim of negligence for purposes of avoiding the false imprisonment claim, false imprisonment statute of limitations. In the alternative, we argued that even if a negligence claim was properly pled, then there was no showing at the summary judgment of damages. And damages are one of the elements of negligence, and at summary judgment, you have to come forward with evidence of damages. In this case, his claim was for having suffered the mental anguish of having been in prison 6 months too long. He did not bring evidence of objective damages, and therefore the court dismissed that. At summary judgment, the plaintiff did not present any evidence of loss of enjoyment of life or loss of income. And under the Chappell case that we provided as our supplemental authorities, loss of enjoyment of life is a very narrow damages remedy. It only has to do where you have alleged and established a disability that has caused you to not be able to engage in either an athletic or artistic pursuit that you pursued before your injury. It's not. You can't relabel a claim for emotional injuries as a claim for loss of enjoyment of life. Similarly, the loss of income claim, again, you have to show a vocation. Here, he did not have a vocation. He did not allege a vocation. And at Clerk's Papers 227, in his request for former pauperous status, he states that he has not had employment since July of 2000. The next issue is the courts having fashioned a new remedy for nominal damages where there have been no actual damages proved in a negligence case. There's no legal authority for that. The court instead expressed a frustration that he didn't think it was fair that the plaintiff didn't get something just owing to his not having filed a timely claim presented evidence or named the proper parties. So the court fashioned a new remedy for nominal damages, which are not supported by the law. Though there's nothing directly on point in Washington, the Hoagland case out of Oregon makes it clear that it is black-letter law that there are no nominal damages in a negligence case. If he had wanted to make a claim for nominal damages, the Zuck case, again out of Alaska, awarded nominal damages where a false imprisonment claim was timely and properly made. The next issue is the amount of nominal damages. This was an unusual situation because at the summary judgment, though nobody really raised the issue, the court said there was a claim stated for nominal damages. It didn't make sense for purposes of judicial economy to have a trial just on the issue of nominal damages. So we made a motion to set nominal damages without admitting liability, without admitting that there's a claim for nominal damages, so this could be resolved. And we looked at the case law, and we found that adjusting for inflation, a claim for nominal damages can range between $1 and approximately $1,000. And the court took the upper end of that and set that as being, had there been a claim stated for nominal damages, that would be the amount. In order to resolve this without a trial, we agreed to pay that amount and deposited that amount with the court. So basically, in conclusion, the plaintiff had remedies here. First of all, in his complaint, he says he was aware that he was being held beyond his release date. He could have brought a personal restraint petition, had himself released, and then within 2 years brought a claim for false imprisonment. He also had a remedy in the Section 1983 constitutional claim, which has a 3-year statute of limitations, had he sued a proper party. And he also had a claim for false imprisonment.
Who would that be?
Pardon me?
Who would that be?
That would be the person that was in charge of calculating his sentence according to the facts as he's alleged it. And that could have been simply ascertained either through his personal knowledge or an interrogatory and amending the complaint, which there was no attempt to do. So the plaintiff had remedies had he properly pursued them. Since he didn't, this case should have been dismissed in its entirety. Thank you.
Thank you. Excuse me.
May it please the court, counsel. We're looking at two areas where there is no deciding case law in this state. The first is their allegation that a charge of negligence was not appropriate and that therefore you should find as a matter of law that the state was not negligent but in fact was guilty of an intentional tort, and that therefore the statute of limitations had run, and that Mr. Zamfino's cause should be dismissed. I don't believe that that would be the case. Certainly there's a difference between an intentional and a negligent tort. Counsel never discussed that. Their briefs never discussed that. And so it will be up to you to determine whether or not an action which is based on actions that are not intentional but are negligent is one that you must place under the statute of limitations that addresses a 2-year time limit on intentional torts. Counsel also said, well, it's plaintiff's fault. I mean, he as a layperson confined in prison, should have thought to have brought a personal restraint petition, which might have gotten him out sooner and therefore would have relieved the state of any action against them for having held him beyond the time he was sentenced to. I did not hear any citation of authority for that position, and I don't believe there is any that says that he failed to pursue his remedies and that would absolve the state. Counsel submitted an additional authority, that is State versus, Chapel versus Ganger. In addressing the whole issue of...
Counsel, your time has expired.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.